everyone. This is Leslyn Keith, President of the Board of Directors at Lipedema Project and Director of Research. Welcome to Living Well with Lipedema. Today we have Dr. Anthony Jay with us talking about exposure to plant and mold estrogens and their impact on our health. Dr. Jay earned his PhD in biochemistry from Boston University School of Medicine, and he researched fats, hormones, and cholesterol. He is currently at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and he's researching stem cells, epigenetics, and infrared light. He is also the best-selling author of the book Estrogeneration.
So phytoestrogen, plant estrogen. They did a study in Canada with over 100 food items, and they're just plant foods. They're just looking at plants and saying, okay, you eat beans, you eat broccoli, you eat cauliflower, some people eat kale, on and on and on. Let's look at how much plant estrogen is in all of those different plants. They were all under 1,000 units of estrogen, except soy and flax. Soy and flax were over 100,000 units. So it's like a night and day difference between soy and flax and all the other plant foods that you're eating in terms of how much estrogen they have. So that should be on your radar. Be careful with soy and flax. Some people handle it better. Some people have excellent genetics for dealing with these natural plant estrogens. Again, at least our bodies have seen those chemicals. Historically, our ancestors, you know, we have enzymes, we have a system to kind of manage it. Our gut bacteria have seen these. But still, you know, with all the other estrogens we're getting in our system, you got to be careful. And there's no denying, I mean, a lot of people talk about the benefits of soy estrogen and things like that in certain situations, certain contexts, but nobody argues about whether or not it acts like estrogen. And similar with flax, you know, there's benefits from flax. And this is an example here. Flaxseed alters estrogen metabolism in postmenopausal women to a greater extent than soy. Most people don't even realize flax can act like estrogen. And by the way, flax was 300,000 units of estrogen. Soy was 100,000. And again, everything else was under 1,000. I mean, it's just such a huge leap. But what's interesting about flax is it can be broken down to this molecule called 2-hydroxyestrone. And that's actually considered a good estrogen. If you actually successfully break it down into this other metabolite, you know, it might actually be beneficial, but it's questionable. A lot of people don't necessarily have good gut bacteria these days. And then the other thing about flax that I do like is that, number one, it has CBD, cannabidiol. And then it also, of course, has a lot of omega-3. So there's pros and cons with flax. I think you can get your CBD from other sources like hemp. I think you can get your omega-3s from other sources like fish. But this kind of confuses a little bit of the research, because if you're trying to study just the estrogen part of it, there's a lot of good parts that come with it. And it makes it messy. It makes it confusing. Cannabis smoke, speaking of CBD, the actual cannabis, you know, and since the 1980s, we've known that it binds the estrogen receptor. It can act like estrogen. And more recently, they've discovered it's just the smoke. It's not the edibles. It's not even the THC. It's certainly not the CBD. It's just something about lighting it up on fire disrupts your natural hormones. So be careful with that. Be aware of it, at least. A lot of teenagers, for example, that are chronic smokers, they have infertility issues, they have some of these issues that, of course, you see this pattern relate to these artificial estrogens. Lavender oil is another one that's a lot of people don't realize. You have a lot of health products these days. They put lavender essential oil. A lot of these conferences I speak at, they don't like me talking about this because every company that sponsors them has these lavender products outside at the tables. Since 2007, the New England Journal of Medicine published a paper. They actually found a bunch of children that were going into puberty. And these were like babies. They were like literally one-year-olds starting to go into puberty. And the common theme with all these children was they were using lavender essential oil products, in particular like lotions and things, and putting it on their skin. And basically they did this study where, yeah, that's just an association. We're not sure if it's lavender, but they actually looked at the lavender and compared it to estradiol. And they shown basically it acts on the estrogen receptor at pretty similar levels. And that's really convincing to me because I'm a biochemist. And that's the kind of research you want to see. So even here in 2018, now a new study lends further evidence, suspected link, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you can read it yourself, but they're still talking about caution and how these lavenders are potential endocrine hormone disruptors. Something to be aware of. This is a completely different study, by the way. There's been multiple studies. It's not just one study from the New England. And they've also done multiple different brands of lavender essential oil, because that's a big kind of complaint that I get is like, well, my brand is good. Like that's what people say. This the brand they used in that study may not have been good, but they've done multiple studies with multiple different brands. And by the way, when they removed the lavender from those children's products, all those health issues went away. So that's good news. Microestrogen, mold estrogen. Clearly, mold is bad. You know, when you've got a mold infestation in your basement or something, they wear hazmat suits because, you know, you don't want people getting exposed to mold. Why not? Why don't you even want to be breathing in it? Because it secretes a bunch of toxins. One of those really nasty toxins acts like estrogen in your body. It messes up your estrogen receptors. Zearalenone is the actual mold toxin. That's what they call this mycoestrogen, this mold estrogen. And as you can see, it's involved in prostate cancer. It inhibits testosterone synthesis. And it just straight up acts like estrogen. Now, the crazy thing is, a number of countries have legal tolerance limits on ZEA, which is the mold estrogen. In America, we have these huge grain silos. We have quite a lot of mold in our grains in particular. And of course, it's going to end up in the animal food and the human food, like cornflakes or whatever kinds of grains we're getting. So in Europe, not only do they regulate, you know, how much mold toxin is allowed, in particular this estrogen mold toxin, ZEA, how much of that is allowed in the human food, they also regulate it for the animal feed. And that's why there's a range, 0.02 to 0.35. And then in the UK, the range isn't quite as strict. It's 0.5 instead of 0.02, and it's up to 2 milligrams per kilogram, which is pretty high. But again, they regulate it not only in human food, but they regulate it in animal food. So the US, what's our limits? We don't have a limit. There is no limit. What's crazy, I would say that there's crickets, right? Like that's what you hear out of the US for the regulations. It's crazy because if Europe doesn't pass code on their feed, on their wheat products or whatever, if there's too much mold, specifically ZEA, zearalenone, they ship it over here. If they don't cut the legal limit for animal feed, they ship it over here and put it in our human food. That's how ridiculous this system. And of course, the obesity rates reflect that. I'm not saying that's, you know, the ultimate metric, but it's uncanny that there is more strict regulations in Europe compared to everybody else, a little bit more in UK and then nothing in the US, and that's reflected.
Thank you, Dr. J, for that great information about those artificial estrogens found in plants and in molds that we're probably exposed to on a daily basis and what to do about it. And thank you also to our listeners. If you haven't already subscribed to our daily flash briefings of tips, tools, and research about lipedema, you can subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Alexa, or at lipedema-simplified.org/flash, where you'll find an archive of all of our flash briefings. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us next time for another Living Well with Lipedema flash briefing.